Mombasa, and so a city that I find very intriguing and interesting. And so this film focuses on one particular space within that city, and you can take that space as a kind of microcosm for the city as a whole, and even for the country, Congo, as such. And it's set in maybe I'm not going to say too much about it before we watch it. It's kind of self-explanatory, but the film is set in the cemetery of Kintambo, which is in the middle of the old colonial heart of Leopoldville, a cemetery that opened in the early 1930s. And more than 20 years ago now, it was closed by the urban authorities because it was full. And so they closed it down. But that never stopped people who surround that cemetery. In the meantime, there's a whole slum area that grew around the cemetery called Khan Luka, Luka Camp. The people who live there refer to it as Leta, the state. And the cemetery is part of their state, kind of shadow or counter state. And so it never stopped them from continuing to use that cemetery to bury people. There's at least 4,000 burials a year still taking place in very chaotic circumstances. That cemetery in itself is totally overgrown by now. It's not been cared for many years. And so it's become a bit of a kind of forest, really, where lots of activities take place that you normally would not expect in cemeteries. And so the film focuses on, actually it's two films in one, or two rhythms. I've tried to capture, in a way, the rhythm of Kinshasa, which is full of a time of waiting on the one hand, and sometimes all of a sudden there's these moments of effervescence, and so it's very much the rhythm also of the music that city generated, the famous Congolese classic rumba, or sukus as we tend to call it now, music. And all these rumba songs are composed in two times. You first always have a very slow part in which the lyrics are being sung and so on, and then at a certain point there's a seben, as it is called, a fast dancing part where a kind of shouting DJ incites the crowd to dance and shouts and so on. And so the film is like that. The first part is the slow part. It sets the scene for the material environment, the physical degradation of that cemetery and the city in which it is set. And it focuses on a group of grave diggers, some adults and some children, a group of 40 men who work there and live there and so on. Whereas the second part of the film focuses on the actual funerals, and especially if a young person dies, and death is more likely to happen with the young, because the population of Kinshasa itself, demographically, it's a very young city of 9 or 10 million inhabitants. 75% of the city is under the age of 25. So there's an enormous amount of young people who die. And when they die, all kinds of things happen, as we will see in the film. So that's what it discusses, and we can have a Q&A about it afterwards. So, thank you.
In Kinshasa, Philip brought me to Bilex, who is a Congolese artist, and you've seen the conditions of life in Kinshasa, which are quite hard and tough. It's almost impossible to live, so you can imagine how tough it is also to become or to be an artist in those conditions. But our project about Kinshasa, the imaginary city, is linked, of course, with the work of Bilex, in the sense that since years he's making models on one hand, and that's the way he expresses himself as an artist, as a kind of demiurge, a person who tries to make his own world. But he had, of course, problems because he didn't have the tools, the materials, the means to produce his artworks. And so a lot of his artwork was a kind of mental constructions, or he had it in mind, he fantasized about it, he dreamt about it. And one of the projects he had in his head, or he dreamt about, was the tourist city, which I was, being an architect, very much interested in, because it's a kind of utopia. With Philip, we discussed, is it a utopia, is it a heterotopia, is it a dystopia? And it's all written in the book, but to my opinion, it's closer to a kind of modernist idea of making a model of another city, not of the city itself, but it's kind of out, let's say, adjacent motor to keep the city running. But what you can see here are, how did it start actually? As Bilex didn't have the means to produce all his works, but had his head full of ideas about his world, or the world according to Bilex, we called at last the project, or the film, or the book. We gave him actually a camera, and he, thanks to the medium of a camera, he tried to visualize what his idea was about the world, about brutality, about how the world is constructed, and you can see some themes. We split them up in small themes in a kind of collection of miniatures on how he conceived his conceptions about things, about beauty, for instance, also about madness, the circle, how the circle is the kind of basic form, not only of the universe, how it's created, but also about things that human beings make. So it's a kind of strange, fascinating world that he tried to capture through the medium of film. And to give an idea, I would like to show you the one about birth, which shows also an important, to me, an important position that Bilex takes, is that he's a Congolese artist, but he's working as a kind of universal artist, in the sense that his project, especially the tourist city, he doesn't see it as a kind of alternative for Kinshasa, as to an alternative of the city. He sees it as a kind of world model to think about the city, to think about, especially it's a tourist city, and the theme of tourist city is linked, one could see it as a kind of interesting alternative for the Disney cities or the Sun cities, which are based on happiness and leisure and the obsession of the West about having good times. This tourist city, and you will see it in the fragment, is more kind of project that turns around the central building, and that central building is a dome, and the dome is in the same time religious, but at the same time it's a museum. And there is the difference about his concept about tourism or leisure as a counterweight or a counterpoint for the city. That this notion of morality, of ethics, of creating a kind of city that is really kind of utopia or a new image for the city. But let me first start to show you a little fragment about birth. And then we go to the tourist city, which is a longer fragment, and where he explains his idea about that city based around that temple, the dome that organizes the city.
Okay, so we've got time for a few more questions, either about the last film or sort of both films together.
Has he ever explained to you why there are nine swimming pools? Is nine a magic number?
Yeah. Well, actually, there's a whole number of symbolics in all of his work. So you should also know that he's a preacher, the Pentecostal preacher. And all of his work, and also the world according to Bilex, tries to explain how the universe works and its rules and mechanisms and so on. But all in search of perfection, because God is perfect and we should strive for perfection. There's a deeply religious idea also behind it. Now, Bilex, for example, is this artist. It's BYL, X from exhibition. BYL, because B is the second number of the alphabet, Y, D. Anyway, if you make a calculation of these three letters, you arrive at 33, the age of Christ. He himself, 3 is actually an important number in this case. He's the third son of his father, and so on and so forth. And so perfection also in the things that he makes. You see, for example, in the tourist city, there's always the perfect form, the square, or white and black, perfect colors, because they don't need to be mixed with anything else. So it's all mathematics. And perfection is also the fact that you can mechanically reproduce the same thing over and over and over. So a kind of Fordist ideal of all of that is there, and of course when he makes these perfect things in a context such as Kinshasa, which is anything but perfect, these things cannot hold on to, they can't exist there, so they have to be engaged in glass cages, which he makes boxes that surround these objects because they're too perfect in a way to. And the tourist city represents that perfection too. It's not a place to live, but to go to and to come back replenished and harmonious and perfect and so on. So
I think the geometry of the dome is also its archetypical form of perfection as well. So.
Mm.
So number and form, geometrics, is the square, the are linked.
But for the perfection, he still needs to protect it from kamikaze.
Yes, so but at the same time, in his universe, and also when you maybe you've seen him here when he talks, there's absolutely not a possibility for a conversation. It's one monologue. This guy, even the clothes that he wears, the chairs that he sits on, he creates his own universe. He talks about himself in the third person, as you've seen. So there's something very authoritarian about it. So also the city in itself. It's something very almost fascist about, and it's in the obsession with security, with the anti-kamikaze and so on. So it's constantly there's a very it's a very authoritarian universe.
It's about discipline and order and of
Albert
course
Speer in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry,
Albert Speer in Berlin.
For example.
Well, that's also more a kind of connotation with the Mundaneum, which is actually also the Corbusier made a building for it, which was actually the starting point of internet, of collecting all knowledge. And it's interesting if you compare what Bilex made with his dome, which is kind of archetypical form. Le Corbusier had the same problem when he had to design the Mundaneum. He also took kind of geometrical form, whereas Neuhaus, who was always also dealing with the notion of museum, got rid of that kind of geometry. So there's kind of interesting thing about this to center a city around a kind of iconographic building, which is actually linked to kind of old tradition of architecture, Western architecture. Actually.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's almost having a joke, really. He knows he's having a joke, because the parallels between Corbusier and Speer are far, far, far too obvious for, you know, and very old. I mean, you
yeah,
know, so it's almost like, and the way he's elevating himself, the camera's deliberately positioned in such a way that he's above the dome and he's preaching. It's almost like he's very aware that he's kind of having a bit of a laugh.
But at the same time, of course, he doesn't absolutely has no idea who Le Corbusier is or Albert Speer or so. There's all of these. In that sense, that's also the interesting thing. It's a kind of almost art brut. Because he has none of these references, and he represents a kind of post-Kantian thing where very late romantic, where science and religion are joined and come together and crystallize into something, something monolithic almost and hard. And although he constantly denies it, he says, "Oh, I live in Kinshasa, but I have nothing with the city. My art is universal and it's for all of humanity." But all of his obsessions with perfection, with cleanliness, with whiteness, and so it's all of it is also the opposite of the environment in which he lives. And so in that sense, he's constantly speaking about that city in a way too, I think. But
also, what's my point about the first film? There didn't seem too much spoken about HIV and AIDS. I mean, is that one of the major causes of death amongst the young people? And is that why people are not understanding what's happening to them, because a lot of children would be born with it, wouldn't they? And they wouldn't know that they would have it, and then they might die suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
And
AIDS is not something that is publicly or openly discussed. And of course, although it certainly is one of the major causes of death for young people in Kinshasa and the country as a whole, but of course you never die of AIDS. You die of all kinds of diseases that are AIDS related, but
very difficult for people to recognize that illness for what it is, and something that is not commonly spoken about. And if it is, it's in a very people relativize it to say, well, you know, I'm zero positive, but so what? I'll be dead anyway before I die of AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 years ago, I was working in Kikwit, a secondary town, 500 kilometers out of Kinshasa, when there was an Ebola outbreak in 95. And people said, actually, we like AIDS, because that at least gives you the time to prepare for your own death, whereas
mm-hmm.
with Ebola, you're gone in 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
all is, it's relative.
It seems like the very thing that the children are doing to celebrate their youth is the very same thing that will lead them to have HIV. I mean, there's those scenes where, like, there's speaking about flirtation and sexuality and how the funerals are places for people to meet each other, and there's a sense that this kind of sexualization, it's gonna spread the virus and then eventually lead to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like there's the trap there of like.
Yeah, that's absolutely not a concern in people's minds.
I just wanted to draw you out on the second film, on the last film, The Tourist City, and connect it up with how you left the discussion of the first film, saying that this was actually about making it sacred, something about politics, really, about death being actually quite central to the way in which the political might be reconstituted after what's happened to the DRC. So I was wondering, actually, this the tourist city, the way when he introduced the dome and all that, he's actually talking about sovereignty. He's talking about, the king and so on.
Mm.
And he's saying, well, it's an empty category. There is nothing. And I am the king and everyone else is the king. So I was wondering if you guys have thought about that. And
I was afraid that we were going to arrive at a gammon.
No, I don't want to arrive at a gammon either. I'm not trying to say you should go there, but I mean, he is going there.
Mm.
I'm not doing that, but I'm trying to say you put those needs in our hands.
In a way he's going there, and in a way these kids are going there as well,
yeah.
Or they spend the gammon on his head. If they're the hobiness sacred, the people who can be killed but not sacrificed,
mm-hmm.
and they live in it is a camp-like
mm-hmm.
world already. But how to reintroduce sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
and in his case, it's linked to the sovereign, which for him is
mm-hmm.
not necessarily political, but religious. It's God. But then, in a kind of aesthetics that very much resonates with, the word of his God is very dictatorial and authoritarian God. It's more Old Testament than New Testament, I would say. And it clearly resonates with a political style that people of his generation have become accustomed to after 38 years of Mobutism, and where the word of the dictator was also omnipresent and also linked, always given a religious, put within a religious framework. For years, all of these people have seen every day before and after the evening journal Mobutu descend from heavens with an aureole around his head and so on. And so politics and religion are very often one.
So the Cité Fleuve is a sort of skyscraper commercial development, isn't it? The Cité Fleuve is a kind of skyscraper commercial development. And does he know about it? And what does he think? Has he told you his opinions about it?
Well, he knows about it because I told him about it. But the thing, and I talked about it for those of you who were there yesterday, about Cité du Fleuve here upstairs. So it's built not literally on his doorstep, because he lives on the riverbank, and this is the Cité du Fleuve satellite, or that huge gated community that's being constructed, has two islands, artificial islands in the Congo River. It's literally 500 meters from where he lives. So having the tourist city on the one hand that he conceived of, and a kind of tourist city is being built next door to where he lives.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks that it's great. in a way, it's a kind of realization of his own dreams.
Okay.
How old is he? not 32, but 33. So that was 2008, so it must be